This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Hurricane Gustav moved inland after hitting the coast of Louisiana earlier today, about 70 miles southwest of New Orleans. We'll follow its progress and bring you an update later this hour. But our main focus is on kids and sports. In youth leagues, kids are taught that who wins and who loses isn't such a big deal. Just go out there and have fun. In reality, of course, winning is a lot more fun. Last month, 9-year-old pitcher Jericho Scott was banned by his youth baseball league because other kids couldn't hit his 40-mile-an-hour fastball. The league wanted to move him up to an older bracket, but his parents refused. So how about playing any other position than pitcher? No again. Eventually, the league disbanded Jericho's undefeated team. It's a story that raises questions about the lessons kids learn from winning and from losing. If it's not important, why do we keep score? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Wilfred Vidrow. He's a pro bodybuilder and was the coach of Jericho Scott's Little League team. It's not associated with the Little League, though. He joins us now by phone from his home in New Haven, Connecticut. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
And why didn't Jericho just move up to an older division?
Well, right now, to move him up to another division, you know, I mean, right now he has pretty good pitch, but the thing is that, you know what, can he bat and can he feel like these older kids? You know, he's prone to getting hurt the same way as these other people claim that he can get hurt by his pitch. And it's only a 40-mile-per-hour pitch, which is, I still consider, that's not even fast compared to some other kids that I have in my own team, my other pitcher that pitch as fast as him, you know?
So you don't buy the argument that a 40-mile-an-hour fastball, the argument some parents have made that their kids could get hurt by it.
No, I don't see it. I mean, I don't see that because right now I have two other pitchers in my team, especially my son, and these other pitchers, they pitch harder. And, I mean, it's the only difference is that this kid, he pitches on target. So, you know, he's on target. He don't hit no one, and that's the main thing. I mean, you know, he's just on target. He does not hit no one, you know.
So if it's really not about fear of getting hurt by his pitch, then why do you think there was so much clamor from the parents that this kid not be allowed to pitch?
See, the problem is, you know, this kid, myself, I have another team. They play against this kid, and even my son's hit against him and all that. But, I mean, the thing is, that, you know, the other team that's claiming about this is that they also have pitchers in their league, in their team that play with Jericho in All-Star team. And it's funny how they say that his pitch, because, you know, right now he's a fourth leg pitcher in the All-Star, and he's just a second baseman. You know, he plays second base for the other coach, you know, and I'm just shocked to hear that his pitch is intimidating all these kids, because I really think it's something else to it, you know what I mean? You got a team that's been winning for 3 years in a row, and I bring my team up, and all of a sudden we're undefeated, and Jericho start playing with us after the fourth game, because right now he was out playing in another league. And I brought him in from the first day. And, I really think it's all excuses. I don't think this is the right thing to do to a child like that, you know.
So you think it's just the frustration of always losing to Jericho?
Right. I mean, because, you know, right now, if you're going to focus on that you just want to win, I mean, come on. I mean, I don't think what's the message on the kids? I mean, you have to give them fun. I mean, let them have fun and, you know, I mean, enjoy themselves. I mean, if you're going to all think about your team has to win because they won 3 years in a row, I think that's not the focus here, you know?
What do you teach your kids about? Obviously, you're undefeated this year, but what do you teach your kids about winning and losing?
This is what I tell my kids all the time. You know what I mean? Win or lose, I mean, you're still, you know what I mean? I tell you, you're still, what you call, we're still having fun. It's all about having fun. I mean, don't focus on the winning part. Let's go out there, give it the best shot, and let's have fun. You know what I mean? And that's what my kids are, because you know what? They love playing the ball. Just give them a ball, and let's play. Because, I mean, like I said, when we play against Jericho's team in another team, in another league, that's what we all focus on, the part of having fun first, you know?
Yeah, but if you lose all the time.
If you lose all the time, I mean, that's the difference right now, because you know what? You learn as you go. I mean, when you're playing with good kids like Jericho, and especially my team like that, we've got a lot of talented players. It's like, you know what, you learn from that. I mean, you know, I even got 7-year-olds in my team playing in the same team as Jericho, and, I mean, they learn. I mean, they learn as they go. If you're going to focus on, you're going to hit my kid, or my kid is not good enough, I mean, you know what, hey, why put them in that league? You know, you got to understand that you got to sign a registration form to state you had to be properly trained and fit to be in this league, you know?
Jericho, and I assume also his parents, must feel terrible because of their decisions. The whole team has been disbanded.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, and this is what hurts the most, that if you're worried about so much, this is all about for the kids. If it's for the kids, why you ban my whole team? You took my whole team out. Right now, they enjoying themselves as from second place, they moved back to first place. And right now, they're in the middle of winning another championship for the fourth year after they ban our team, you know?
Wilfred Vidro, we wish you the best of luck. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Wilfred Vidro is a pro bodybuilder. He was the coach of the pitching phenom Jericho Scott's baseball team. He joined us by phone from his home in New Haven, Connecticut. Joining us now is Robert Lipsyte, the author of several novels for young adults, including The Contender and Raiders Night and One Fat Summer. He was a sports columnist for the New York Times for over a decade. He's covered sports in New York for a very long time. He joins us now by phone from Shelter Island in New York. Bob, nice to have you on the program again.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
And what do you make of the Jericho Scott story?
Well, I think, you know, without your reporting skills and a subpoena power, I really don't think much of it makes sense, nor did what Wilfred say make a lot of sense. If this is about the kids, just, you know, mix and match them at 9 years old and let them go out to play. I think that, you know, there's politics here. There's a lot of ramifications in this story about other teams that wanted this kid. Remember that Jericho Scott also plays, as Wilfred said, on another team, on a higher level team, where he's the fourth pitcher, not the best pitcher. So obviously he doesn't need to be playing on this team. So the story, the interesting thing about the story really is that it's such a window onto youth sports, which has turned drastically since in the last 30 years, since my kids, and I think your kids too, were playing Little League and soccer and stuff like that, high school sports. High school sports itself is on the brink of becoming one of the great new revenue producers in American sports. And what that means is that now kids are being scouted in middle school and in elementary school for the elite teams, the travel teams, the all-star teams that eventually feed the high school varsities.
So winning matters a whole lot.
Yeah, winning means a lot because what these nine-year-olds, and by the way, Jericho is not playing Little League.
No, I understand. We correct
that. In Little League, there's, you know, there's a kind of slack where 9-year-olds and 12-year-olds, almost 13-year-olds, can play with each other, but only if they have comparative skills. This is not like that. But I think that, you know, at 9 years old, they should still be, you know, having fun. Maybe they shouldn't be pitching. Maybe adults should be pitching to them. Maybe there should be more rotation. Maybe the game really, you know, you said early on, why do we keep score? Well, I'm not sure. Why, you know, why at 8 and 9 do we keep score? Why do we keep score?
To find out who wins and who loses, presumably, but it's putting a lot of pressure on the kids.
Yeah, and so the kids become pawns, as we know, of parents and of coaches acting out their own needs. And the kids themselves, you know, I really think that it's important that anybody with great talent, as Jericho Scott may well have, you know, find out the limits of that skill and talent, see how far he can go. But, you know, as kind of a non-jock myself growing up, although I spawned jocks in family, I really care more about the kids who are turned into couch potatoes, who turned into fantasy leaguers and watchers, because at 9 and 10 and 11, they began to feel badly about themselves because all the resources and energy and interest was focused on the Jericho Scots, the kids who would have the chance to go on and make their dads and their towns and their high schools proud. I mean, we saw the ultimate grotesque of that in the Olympics. My feeling about those little girl Chinese gymnasts was I really hope they're 10 years old. I don't want to think that 16-year-old girls look like that, as if they've been bound, you know, not just their feet. but their whole bodies.
But Bob Lipsight,
for that,
some people would say that look, the rest of our lives are not going to be places where everybody gets a trophy and you don't keep score.
That's right. I absolutely agree with it.
You do learn lessons
that,
from losing.
I think 12 and 13 and 14 is time enough to get onto the rat race. Well, I don't think you have to be a rat at nine.
Let's get a caller on the line. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us talk@npr.org. Adam is calling in Arlington, Massachusetts.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking the call. And actually, both shows have been amazing today, so I salute your producers for putting it all together.
Well, they deserve all the credit.
Yeah, I have a nine-year-old son who this is the first year. He's played soccer for probably 4 years in Arlington, a very vibrant soccer community. And this is the first year he's on a travel team. And that's sort of, you know, we call it what it is, sort of a tryout team where there's some separation between the kids who supposedly are good and the kids who supposedly aren't good enough for the travel team. And I sort of questioned it. You know, when I was 9 years old, I went to my buddies. I was, we go to a park and we play soccer. We go to a park and play baseball. And I think we're a little over-regimented. And at the same time we're over-regimenting, we're putting a little too much pressure on kids and also parents to sort of strive for this, call what it is. It's a little bit of elitism. When somebody who I used to work with at Northeastern University Center for the Study of Sport and Society, Bob Bigelow, former NBA player, he said to me, Adam, you're not going to convince these people. They would rather have travel teams at age six. You know, there's a lot of ego involved here. You're not going to convince them. And he points out that, and I've noticed this on the field, it's all levels of bad soccer play. There's not any great nine-year-olds out there, even if your name's Freddie Adu. You know, there's not a lot of great nine-year-olds out there. So I guess, you know, even with my son joining this team, I sort of I wish we could step back from this. And you know, the point we brought up today was baseball, and I'm reminded of the old Bad News Bears movie where the whole crowd is saying, let them play. And that's what it should be. The parents should step out of the way and let the kids play.
Adam, thanks very much for the call. We wish your son the best of luck.
Thanks.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break, so stay with us. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're following the path of Hurricane Gustav. It's now a Category 1 storm. We'll bring you an update later this hour. Right now we're talking about winning and losing. It's not supposed to matter in youth leagues played by kids ages 7 to 10. It's supposed to be just how you play the game, but let's face it, winning can be a lot more fun. When kids play sports, winning and losing take on new implications about how they'll live their grown-up lives off the athletic fields. We want to hear from parents out there about the lessons kids learn from winning and losing. If it's not important, why do we keep score? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also check out what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guest is Robert Lipsight, the author of several novels for young adults, many of them about sports, and a former New York Times sports columnist. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Holly. Holly with us from San Francisco.
Yes. I wanted to talk about the not keeping score, the suggestion of not keeping score. And I know that when my son played T-ball, so how old are they, five? Maybe. The official policy was there's no score keeping, and yet children kept score. I noticed that you couldn't stop them from counting.
And so the kids knew who won and who lost at the end of the game.
Yeah, definitely they knew. So that's one thing. Do I have time for one more comment?
Go ahead, please.
When your guest was talking about the money that's involved in that they're already investing in lower grades, and the kids are getting who should be playing sports are being marginalized because they're not stars. There's also the point that schools are using selling unhealthful food as fundraisers, so all of the kids who aren't playing sports are supporting sports by buying Cokes and chips, and a very few kids are getting their fancy uniforms and so forth on them at the profit from those Cokes and chips. So I know that's a different topic, but I just wanted to bring up how this can distort policies on everything.
Holly, thanks very much for the phone call.
Well, I mean, she's really kind of touched on the, you know, the commodification of youth sports in every way. The idea that sports, you know, on its highest level of youth sports, we've got high school playing fields, football fields in Texas, for which naming rights go for $2 million, the Neil Conan Field.
I didn't pay $2 million for that.
Really? You just promised to
mention
to
it frequently on Talk of the Nation, like that.
And of course, what that means is you've got a winning team, you've got money, maybe Nike is going to supply the uniforms, and eventually there will be national tournaments with Sony and Gatorade as your big sponsors.
But those schools, Bob, will certainly say, look, if the baseball team can make money, if the football team can make money, they can support all these other sports. We're losing so many athletic programs, maybe that'll keep volleyball going in the wintertime.
Good luck. But the college experience has shown that even a winning football team, unless it's Notre Dame, does not really contribute profits to the school. So that's a false hope. That doesn't happen. But meanwhile, the kid, you know, the caller Adam really kind of, you know, his own ambivalence about, yeah, he was proud that his son is on a travel team, but, you know, is this really make sense at this age? And of course, you know, the double thing is, one, yes, his kid is going to have a little burst of self-esteem now, but may very well burn out of sports altogether. And all the kids who didn't make the travel team at nine are, as we said earlier, going to be marginalized and may not get to bloom at a future date. It's really a bad system, and it's really not that hard to fix. It's just really about, as Holly said, the kids keep score anyway. Sure, let them keep score. But it's when the adults start keeping score and reminding them and putting it in the newspaper that it becomes pressure and it becomes important.
Well, we spoke earlier with the coach of an undefeated team. Joining us now is Lance Martin, the head coach of the Calabasas High School football team, which has the third longest losing streak in the history of the state of California. The Coyotes lost 44 straight games from 2002 until last year when they finally broke their losing streak. And Coach Martin is with us now from his home in Calabasas, California. And we've been talking about youth sports at the ages of, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. It's a little different in high school, isn't it?
It sure is. Neil, thanks for having me on today.
And
high school, I sort of came into the situation at the tail end of the streak and just sort of met the kids, and they were looking for hope. And, you know, so I got hired, and I think I was able to offer a little bit of that to them.
Looking for hope, so their morale must have been pretty low.
I think so. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I think at some point the finger has to be pointed to someone, and I feel bad for the former coach because, you know, I think the parents and the players and even maybe the community, pointing the finger wrongly at someone when it's not one person, really. It's really a cumulative effect of, over the years, or even, you know, for the Calabasas' sake, or over time, that has affected the situation. It's not any one person, and it's certainly no one. Everyone in the situation is trying their best.
I'm sorry, Bob Lipsight's trying to get in. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, how did you break the streak? What did you do different?
Well, you know, I can't really speak for what was done before, to be honest with you.
No, just what did you do?
What we did is we came in and, we just sort of saw what was there. We made a lot of changes in positions. We really had them buy into the team concept and, you know, taught them that, you know, we're teaching them how to be fine young men. We want them to, you know, when I got hired for the job at, you know, I wasn't talking about wins and losses. I can't promise that. But what I can promise is that I'm teaching the young men responsibility, you know, how to treat other people, what it is to be committed to a, you know, a group, or even, you know, hopefully they're learning how they can be, you know, committed to their family and learning those kind of things.
And Coach Martin, I have to ask, I think we've all seen, either read the book Friday Night Lights or seen the movie of the TV show. What is this one of those towns where how the high school football team means a whole lot to the town?
I think it could if, you know, I think if they had something that has been built there. But, you know, in terms of the way it is right now, no, definitely not. I think that we're in a community where there's a lot of resources to be able to do almost, you know, a lot of the kids have, you know, good resources. You know, it's, I would think, a white-collar area. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always the number one thing in town, high school football at Calabasas High. So
and probably
that helps, you know, create a little bit of that.
And do you think you were there when they broke the streak? First of all, tell us, do you think kids learn a lot from losing? And what was the reaction when they finally did break the streak?
You know, it's like the monkey off the back, you know, kind of a situation. And it was one of those things, I don't know if they ever thought they could do it. You know, I had a, even them, even the seniors, even, you know, freshman and sophomore level hadn't been too successful and actually hadn't won a game. So for them to actually come through and get one, I think it was like almost all hopes lost. Are we, you know, we're working so hard and we can't get to the top, kind of a deal, or even get over the hump. And I think they had lost that hope for a while. And
and how's the team doing this year?
Well, it's an interesting group, because when you have a high school situation, you know, you lose that crop of seniors. And when I came in, I evaluated the guys and I told them that it was a good group to come in on, in terms of they were a close group and they were able to sacrifice together to get to do what they want to break the streak, which they did. And so, you know, coming up is different groups. So now we're dealing with a whole different team and a different, you know, set of young men each year. So, you know, I don't know if the groups coming up were willing to make the sacrifice, because we, you know, the learning how to practice hard and the commitment it takes to be able to compete and, you know your assignments and be in shape and be committed. All those things are very tough things to do, especially, you know, when you tag that wins and losses thing to it. So when you're not so, you know, one win's great, but hey, they all want, it's like the video game scenario that, you know, you can get online right now and get an answer to anything you want in the world. But, and that's sort of what we see, I think, now in sports. They just want to show up and hey, everything should be great.
Yeah, you got to work for it.
I don't know if it's that's the case. Sometimes they are bypassing the process before,
Coach,
you know, they want the product rather than the process to get there.
Coach, let me ask you this. At what age do you think that these young men are really ready to commit, to try to win, to sacrifice, to dedicate? Do you think 9 and 10 is too early?
Well, it's all speculative. I think, you know, you know, American culture really has sort of been bred on, you know, the more effort you put in, you can be successful if you put in more effort. So, you know, I can understand, you know.
So winning's important at that age.
Well, I think for some people it is. And, you know, I think the youth sports should, you know, hopefully try to be building young men as well. And, you know, I know that, you know, AYSO and some of these other organizations are trying to, you know, get community, get people involved and those types of things. And they equal out the playing time and those kind of things. And they set rules in place to, you know, to make it more competitive. And you know, there's no pre-draft and, you know, all these things. So I think there's ways to make competitive equity. And hopefully all our leagues are trying to do that. Obviously, when you get into club sports, hey, you're trying to get the, you know, the best you can and that kind of stuff. But I remember my little league was all, everyone, you were in a draft and the coaches, you know, picked you in the snake draft. And so, you know, if you got some of the better guys, it's generally pretty competitive. So hopefully you're going for that kind of deal. And that's
Coach
all we
Martin.
Want at Calabasas is to be in a situation where we can be competitive. And
well, Coach Martin, we wish you the best of luck.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Lance Martin, head coach of the Calabasas High School football team in Calabasas, California, with us by phone today from his home there in Calabasas. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Richard calling. Richard from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I've been involved in youth soccer for about 16 years now in the United States. And, you know, quite frankly, I couldn't disagree more with the previous caller about winning at 9 and 10. For me, and I know the coaches that are around me, it's all about development and teaching these kids, just as it is, you know, as you move through elementary school and into middle school. You know, I always use the analogy that you can't expect a second grader to read at a sixth grader's pace. there's just no way that they can do that. So, you know, what we're looking at is an educational process, and it's educating not just the coaches, which is important, about what we want to get out of the, you know, from the kids, but also the parents. It's not about winning at those times, at that age. And if you, you know, go through the developmental process, then eventually those results will come when it's more important at 16 and 17 years old.
I detect an accent there, Richard. I wonder, is this the same in the country where you grew up?
It is probably a little more competitive over there in terms of the age group, you know, when they think about winning and losing, which, once again, I don't agree with at all. I've been fortunate enough to attend a number of academies, professional academies in England, and they do some very good things, and they talk about de-emphasizing winning and losing, but I think that they still may be in a situation where, you know, they're producing professional players, and they're probably looking at players much younger to move on into a professional setting, where generally we're not here in the United States, you know?
Mm. Richard, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
No problem.
We're talking about kids and youth sports, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And interesting that he would say it's taken a little more seriously in England, where, of course, they're trying to develop professional ball players.
Well, of course. And as, you know, Alex Rodriguez's salary goes up, as Division I football scholarships become much more important. But meanwhile, we don't really have viable professional soccer in this country. There would be a difference. Soccer would be a marvelous model for us, except it's not a national game here.
Let's get Jody on the line. Jody with us from Grand Haven in Michigan.
Hi, how are you, Neil?
Very good, thanks.
I was astounded when I first heard, you know, why keep score, because my son grew up, he's eight now, and he started playing soccer at four, and the way they do it in Grand Haven on the youth soccer is they don't keep score. It's not allowed. The kids don't keep score, everybody's a winner, and they all walk away feeling great, which I think is awesome. Except in the long run, now that he's older and he's playing sports where they do keep score, he can't understand why not everybody's, you know, a superstar and why he doesn't win all the time. And he ends up actually more frustrated when things don't go exactly right than I think he would had he been on a league where he started learning right from the very beginning that, you know, you've got superstars and then you've got some that aren't so good. And
even if he was one of those kids who wasn't so good?
Well, he's a middle-of-the-road player. I mean, he's got skill and talent, but obviously he's not a superstar. But he pours his guts out on the field, and he plays for all he's worth. And that's kind of what we're trying to teach him, is that, you know, you put it all out there, and if you win or lose, it doesn't matter as long as you have fun. And I think the biggest problem is parents drop their children off, you know, to a coach. They don't work with them. They don't give them any fundamental assistance after work or whenever the kids are at practice or not at practice, and then they show up on game day and really, you know, hammer their kids that they got to win. And I think the problem isn't keeping score. I think the problem is overzealous parents that want, you know, to have a Shaquille O'Neal or a Michael Jordan or even a Tiger Woods in their house.
Those are examples that are tough to keep up with, Bob Livesay.
Well, sure, and I think that the you know, it's hard work. The idea that sports can be some sort of babysitter or concentration camp or safety valve for kids just doesn't work. I mean, unfortunately, if you want this thing to work, you've got to get involved. You've got to make sure that in the early years, this really is developmental. The kids get fundamental practice. They do healthy things. They learn to play collectively and like each other. And then somewhere along the line, they start separating themselves. The kids who go out to the outfield and smell the flowers will be separated from, you know, the kids who smell sulfur and want to win. And somewhere around 10, 11, 12, 13, that really starts to happen big time, and you can't stop that. But it's early on where they've got to learn fundamentals, they've got to learn to play together, that they've got to learn to care about their bodies in positive ways, that sports makes sense. Otherwise, you know, it's just another way of preparing them for the major leagues.
Jody, thanks very much for the call. We wish your son the best of luck.
Thank you, Neil.
And Bob Lipsight, always good to talk with you.
Thank you, Neil.
Robert Lipsight, the author of several novels for young adults, including The Contender and Raiders Night. He used to be a sports columnist for the New York Times for more than a decade and covered sports in New York for a very long time. He joined us by phone from Shelter Island in New York City. Coming up, Hurricane Gustav came ashore this morning. We'll have a report from the Gulf Coast where Gustav is still pounding away. And we'll hear from Tulane University President Scott Cowan. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.